Welcome to the Entrepreneurs Visiting Victor podcast with Victor Dadage, where you'll hear stories and strategies to help increase your sales and grow your business. Here's your host, Victor Dadage.
All right, welcome to Entrepreneurs Visiting Victor. I'm your host, Victor Dadage. I hope you're having an amazing day so far. Today, we have an incredible guest. He is the founder and the chief brand scientist at Quantum Branding. He helps brands become authentic and memorable category leaders through the power of brand science. Brand science is the core what fuels a successful brand's growth, sales, and marketing. And he's passionate about helping growing purpose-driven brands to get to the next level, disrupt their market, and leverage the power of brand science to become the industry authority they're meant and made to be. So let's welcome Stephen Fry. How are you doing today, Stephen?
Hey, thanks for having me. And thanks for viewers and listeners for joining us today. Excited to connect with you and share with you some great goodies here with Victor.
It's great to have you on. Stephen, I'd like to get started by asking, please share your story. How did you wind up becoming an entrepreneur?
Yeah, so I think the best answer is how didn't I become an entrepreneur? Because I've been always doing this. In like sixth grade or so, I grew up on a farm and my uncle planted some Indian corn and he wasn't going to do anything with it. And a fun story I'd like to share is that that I went and I sold it at the flea market or the antique market. And then the next year I came back and I sold it to the owner of the market. And then so I made a sale with him and then I upsold my own with a decorative bow on it. And so I got double the sales. And so I have a countless amount of stories that are just like that, whether it was making hemp necklaces in, you know, middle school or just being industrious, finding ways to always do what I'm doing and monetize it, but really just share what I enjoy doing. And so that led me to starting my own agency at the end of 2008. I don't know if anybody was around or remembers, or if we tried to ignore it or forget it, but 2008 was kind of a rough year. And I had worked at several agencies already and had been working with brands every day. Went from managing like 52 campaigns one spring to managing three after kind of 2008 hit. So we all got let go and I started out on my own and I looked at the thread through just kind of the history of what I'd been doing. And I was like, well, there's no better time than now to do what I do and do what I love and do it for myself. So I decided to open my own agency. And so 2009 was officially when Quantum opened, even though I'd been using the name since 2004. So kind of circumstances, but also it's been in my blood. That's kind of how I got started.
Got it. So basically, since you were a little kid and you're getting that that corn was planted by your uncle, you started selling it, and later on you upsold it. You've always been an entrepreneur, always looking for ways to, do business. So like I said, it wasn't a time when you weren't entrepreneurial. And basically around 2008 or so is really when, and I remember 2008 was a really difficult time, but that's really when you got started with your agency. And and you said officially launched in 2009, even though it really goes back to 2004. So could you talk a little bit more about Quantum in the early days, how it was? Because, every entrepreneur has a different story. So, some have very lot of ups and downs. Some of them takes a while. So sure. There's a lot of learning going on. And as they're learning, they figure out ways how to become very successful, how they can help people grow. So you mind sharing your experiences in those early years?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think really the first thing was, how do you get traction? And that was really kind of the challenge that I had, was how do I get traction? And what was interesting is I've always been working with brands, and I teach this in the Brandpreneur program. It's a program that we have, but the same model that I use, I still had to follow, that every business goes through the same stages, just like you and I. We start out as babies, we grow as infants, then we're toddlers, and then we're children, then we're teenagers, and then we mature. The same thing with your business. And so I had to go through the same process that I was advocating for my clients. And so for me, that was getting traction. And traction is when you get your first few clients. Traction is when you're getting off the ground, validating your offer. And so I had to go around and connect with a lot of people and say, hey, this is what I'm thinking about doing. What do you think about this? And telling the people that I knew in my circles. And it was exhaustive because when you think about it, it's not a one-to-many activity. It's not like social media. That's actually like a scaled-up activity. So I had to start at the ground roots and really say, like, is this something you see value in? And people are like, oh, yeah, we actually could use that. Thank you. Would you mind working with us? And so the first few clients were the result of me ensuring that I was listening to my customers. And those customers were typically people that were just within arm's reach. They were people who were nearby me, people who knew of people who knew me. So it wasn't too far out from my network. Went to a lot of networking events, had a lot of like really bad coffee, did some BNI mixers. I don't know if anybody's been to BNI, but you got to get up really, really early. The good ones serve you breakfast. So if you're into BNI and this is a helpful tool for you, go to the ones that serve you breakfast. But lots of networking, and then kind of found out like really who are the people who are a good fit. And I found it was people who serve my clients and the types of clients I want to work with, but don't do what I do. And so that really was a process of me identifying who are those people and how do we develop relationships? Because it's not who you know, it's actually how many and who knows you. So that's really the secret there for me was coming up with a lot of finding the people who I need to work with, and then making sure they all know who I am. So that was really kind of the first processes of getting traction with Quantum in the first early days.
Got it. No, thanks for sharing that. You know, it's all about getting traction, you know, getting your, you know, feet wet, you know, getting off the ground, getting your first clients. And obviously it's a lot of work because a lot of people don't know you. So, you know, you did a lot, you know, you talked to a lot of people, you told your friends and you ask them, is this something you see is valuable? And a lot of them say, yeah, this I could find this is really helpful. I could definitely get value out of this. And through that, you started getting some of your clients. And you also mentioned that you did a lot of networking. And, you know, you realized the importance of building relationships because the thing is, you have to go find people. They're not going to go, especially being, they're not going to go look for you. Once you have that reputation, yeah, then people start finding you. And you mentioned you went to BNI and some of those places did not have good food.
They did not have breakfast. They didn't have good coffee either.
Yeah, good coffee. So make sure they have good coffee and early in the morning. So, yeah, but I definitely know a lot of people who do use BNI. And I think you got alluded to it. It's like you look for people that, number one, it's a place where everyone helps each other. You help people get clients. They help you get clients. And you kind of make sure you're not doing the exact same thing. You know, maybe kind of things that kind of overlap, like, you know, like you said, you had people that do certain things, but it was not the exact same thing you did. So they could give you clients because, you know, even though they had so many things, it was different. So something they couldn't provide, but it's something you could provide. So, and talk about the importance of developing relationships, which is something that's really important. And really getting to know people who know you. One thing, one guy wrote, and I can't remember it's like basically saying, it's also just looking for the people. Yeah. Like you said, getting to know also finding people that can help you. There are also certain things you can't do. So you sometimes look for people who can do the things who know the people that you don't know. So would you agree that's also part of the equation?
You know, you gotta, I think for me as a strategist, I'm a brand strategist. And if you're maybe unfamiliar with any of your listeners who are unfamiliar with that term, brand strategy sounds complicated, but it's actually a little bit more simpler. And so I like to say, what are your business goals? What are your business goals? And then what is your brand, your visual and verbal assets? And that's what I work with every day. And we want to increase the amount of those visual and verbal assets. That's your distinctive brand assets. So brand strategy is really using your business goals plus your brand identity and your distinctive assets to accomplish your goals. And so when I'm using that, when I'm using brand strategy, I'm looking for the pieces. I'm looking for the gaps. I'm looking for the white spaces. Looking for what does everyone else do in a category that we need to mimic so customers feel like we're intuitively the same? And sometimes what are things that we can do distinctively or uniquely that make us stand out, that people notice us? So when it comes to finding partners, you know, sometimes having a highly visible partner is very, very important. Typically, I find the more visible the partner, the larger they are and the larger reputation, And so it, there's usually often a difficulty if they're too big. You know, you're kind of the little guy. And why would they share who you are and what they do? Like if I went in my field and I went to the Seth Godins and the Marty Neumeyers and the big folks and I said, let's partner. You know, they're not as familiar with brand science. And I'm smaller. But if I went to people that are just maybe one or two rungs ahead of me, I can kind of catch up on their coattails. And that's kind of the same thing when you're looking for people who you can work with and connect with that can help grow your business, that can help you move you to the next stages in your business. And so that's kind of the same thing with networks and the same with social media and on LinkedIn. People who are about the same size or a little bit bigger are more likely to kind of open their book of business because they want to gain credibility. So typically I kind of white space and I look and see where are those pieces and who can I find that fits that, but also is a good fit that's comparable, just maybe a few rungs ahead of me.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Look for someone who's like in a similar size to you, maybe a little bit bigger, but not someone who's really huge like Tony Robbins or Robert Kiyosaki. Right. Those guys are huge guys because it's like right. You said, it's going to be really hard. And you, like you said, why would they want to reach out to you? Because, you know, do they really need it? What can they get from you? So, I mean, we all have something to give, but like they probably are looking for someone who's a similar level to them and they feel they can get more from them. So you're right. Look for someone who's maybe a couple rungs ahead of you. And so you can both help each other. So I definitely think that makes a lot of sense. And you mentioned, you know, you're looking for the business goals, the brands, you know, what are the gaps, what are the white spaces. And so you mentioned how things are done. So, you know, cause I'm sure a lot of people when they're getting into this business, they have certain beliefs and myths about branding and marketing, which may not be correct. So what would you say are some of those myths that people have about branding and marketing that's not necessarily true and that they should avoid?
Yeah, great question. And what's interesting is when we talk about marketing and branding, I like to just simply define marketing as any activity that says, hey, do business with me. That's really, you know, think back to the days when we didn't have digital media or anything. We'd put a sign outside that said, oh, I'm a blacksmith, or, oh, this is the bakery. Little sandwich board signs that people would identify. You know, imagine you're living in a medieval town or, you know, we're in times of castles and things. You know, you would go to the town square and how would you know? You'd see a sign outside. And so as technology and things change, so do the modalities that we use. And so I like to define marketing as just, hey, do business with me. And those modalities change over time as technology changes. But what the real goal of that is to increase your top of mindness so people think of you first. And top of mindness is kind of a new term that most people don't think may be familiar with. If you've never heard of that, another word may be mental availability. It's just the ability for you to think of somebody first. And essentially, when marketing is out there, it's the distinctive things that you know, the color, the word, the shape, the story, the sounds. You know, I'm Tom Baudet and I'll leave the light on for you. And you can hear the jingle from Motel 6. And, you know, so there's those different things. Those are the distinctive parts of the brand that create memories. And so that's how those two work together. And so, you know, when it comes to marketing and branding, it's really easy to look at what other people are doing and try to achieve that right away. And so that's the first myth, is that I need to be doing, so this is interesting, listen to this carefully. I need to be doing everything the same way at the same level as everyone else. And so one of the myths is that, you know, we get started, we create a website, you create your social media, and you're trying to deploy a scaled marketing. It's just not sustainable when you're really small, when you're just getting going. So the first one is, don't try to deploy your marketing on a mass scale. If you're getting traction, your marketing should be getting traction. You should find out what is working, what doesn't, what messages resonate. Because really at the end of the day, whether it's your marketing or your brand or your operations or your customer experience, all those things are being kind of tested, optimized, and scaled eventually. But don't start at the scale. It's just really, really impossible. So I'd say the first myth that's really important we want to avoid is trying to deploy at scale, super scaled marketing. So that's one marketing myth. And I would say the other one that I see the most often is that when it comes to branding, the biggest myth is that one and done. Yo, we created our brand, Mark. We're done. Or, oh, we created our brand. It's our brand. But what's interesting is we always want to be growing in kind of zhuzhing and kind of refreshing our brand identity and our assets so that they don't become stagnant, but that they become a living expression. And I like to mention Coca-Cola as an example. There's a company called Coca-Cola. I don't know if anyone's here heard of it, but they offer carbonated beverages. And what's interesting is they have a tagline, you know, open happiness. They have a little musical tagline, always Coca-Cola. And if we count those things up, all the sensory objects that they have over 150 from color to flavor, you know, flavor profiles like, you know, Diet Coke Coke Zero or Cherry Coke, you know, all the different flavors, the colors, the typography, they even have their own custom typeface that they use. When we count those up, there's over 150 of those assets. But what's interesting is every time summer rolls around or fall rolls around, you better believe that they're putting little music notes on the packaging, or they're putting footballs when it's football season, because they're trying to show you every day they want you to enjoy Coca-Cola with these everyday experiences. And the packaging is just being refreshed a little bit all the time. So the first myth was about deploying marketing at scale, the second myth is really that with branding, that once you create a brand, you're done. And so I like to advise brands that we always want to make sure that we have enough distinctive brand assets. And interestingly enough, most brands typically only have 3 to 5: color, word, shape, their brand mark, maybe a tagline. When we look at big brands, they have over 150 and counting. So brand science shows us we want to have about 15 to 30. And all that means is you're having enough in every category of word, shape, color, story, music, sound, character, to create more memories. And that's really what it comes down to. The more memories you have about a brand, the more you'll remember them. So myth number one, stop trying to deploy at scale marketing if you're not at scale in your business yet. And number two, the second one is, being one and done with your brand and actually creating enough distinctive brand assets that you refresh over time.
Thanks for sharing that. I think those are two very good and very important points. And especially in the beginning, you don't want to try to scale everything because you don't know what works and what doesn't work. So you should do some testing.
And it's exhausting too. Take care of yourself. Don't tire yourself out before you're even going.
Yeah, it's exhausting and it can make you bankrupt because you scale up and it doesn't work. You ask for a lot of problems. And like you say, you're not going to get much sleep anyway. So you're right. It's exhausting. It's tiring. I totally agree. And you also mentioned the second point is, don't think just because you create a brand, you're one and done and you don't have to worry about things. You always have to keep working on improving the brand, changing things. And you mentioned the example of Coca-Cola. It's got like 150 different types of assets and it'll change things. Like for example, in the fall that you'll see footballs on the can. So it's like it's always like adjusting for the time and the seasons because it's just going to keep it on people's minds. Like you said, you want to be top of mind. You always want people to think of you first. So when you do those little things, you know, maybe they put skis during the winter. I don't know what they put, but they might do something like that or snow, whatever.
This last year was snowflakes. During the wintertime, there were snowflakes. That's snowflakes I found are a very generic wintertime object. But unless you're in countries where there is no snow, that's a little weird. So I'm pretty sure they geo-contextualize things in other places during the seasons.
Exactly. Whereas like over here in the United States, it's going to be snowing in January. In Australia, it's going to be summertime, so I'm sure they have for the Australian cans, they have different items there because it's summertime. So I'm sure they have that all taken care of. So you're right. It's in different countries and different times of the year, it's going to be different types of packaging. But it is brilliant because it keeps being – because here's the thing. There, you, they have so much competition out there. So you want to be on the top of the minds of everyone, and people being bombarded. So those little things are going to make a big difference. So people don't forget about it, because it's so easy for people to forget about you when people are put doing these other little things. Because their competitors are probably trying to do something similar as well. So their major competitors. So you, if you're not doing it, chances are someone who's competing with you is, and there's a good chance you can lose a lot of that business. So you can't, like you said, you can't get stagnant. You know, a lot of people, they get complacent. You can't get complacent, especially in this time. It's a lot different than it was 50 years ago. Things are changing like every second. The people just bought with technology. I mean, there's so many things happening all the time. They say technology doubles, like the amount of technology doubles every 2 years. So I thought those are some very good points you brought up.
And you know, that actually brings up a third myth, I would say, is that, you know, we need to realize that all brands compete against each other. There's no such thing as your customers. Coca-Cola shares the same customers as Pepsi. Chevrolet shares the same customers as Ford. And so, you know, you may think that you're a luxury bag and you only compete against other luxury purses and bags. No, that's actually not true. You compete against anyone who sells bags. So in that category, you share all your customers. And so that's kind of a secret one is especially you said a good word of complacent and stagnant. The opposite of that is proactive and fresh. So we want to stay proactive and fresh with our branding and our in our marketing to stay top of mind.
I like that. Yeah. Don't be stagnant, complacent, be proactive and fresh. And like you said, all brands compete against each other. You're all sharing the same customers. And unfortunately, I think some companies don't understand that to their detriment. Now, you have this brand sign. So you want to talk a little bit more about it and how it can help clients out?
Yeah, absolutely. So brand science is literally the evidence-based metrics of how we look at a brand and how we create more memories. So, you know, I mentioned, you know, the distinctive brand assets. Actually, I have a checklist that you can get. It'll be in the show notes, or you can check it out at bit.ly / brand science checklist. But on that checklist, that's the first step. And that's one of the ways that we use brand science is simply by counting how many distinctive brand assets you have. And I won't get into the weeds, but essentially we measure according to your category the efficacy or effectiveness of your assets, how they stack up. Are you using colors that are distinct to you? Or here's a question: does that color prompt your competition? Does that name prompt your category or prompt your competition? So there's a series of questions and criteria in which we evaluate your brand's distinctive brand assets. And that's just kind of the first step. There's several other sciences that I use that help us create more effectiveness or efficacy in the top of mindness, that mental availability we want to have. And it basically comes down to how we think and create memories. And then also how we communicate and create experiences. So what's interesting is social media and having digital marketing really often focuses on metrics afterwards. And what we like to focus on with brand science, or what I like to focus on with brand science, is we want to go before we get to that deployment and those metrics. How can we make it more effective before it even goes out the door? Using the evidence-based metrics of brand science. And so there's over 13 areas of different sciences that I use, and there's always more that I'm working on adding and ensuring that we're developing. But the idea is ultimately we want to make sure that your brand is creating the most distinctive brand assets that represent you so that we can create the most memories. And that is a well-crafted narrative and story, visually and verbally, so that when people think of that category, they think of you. So a great example would be is if you wanted to launch a new coffee shop, we would evaluate basically all the competitors locally, regionally, nationally, and internationally, and then chart that out. And also know that while you're getting started, we need to know who the people down the street are because we don't want to confuse people about the place down the street. There's a place down for me called Orsa, which is a Bayer, Orsa Brewing, Orsa Coffee. Well, we don't want to use a Bayer if they're going to use a Bayer. But we also need to know we don't want to use the same color green that Starbucks uses, because then people are going to think of us. But we also need to understand that Starbucks chose green because 98% of the category internationally is red. So there's some interesting things in play that when it comes down to it, we want to be aware locally, regionally, nationally, internationally, as well as what are some of these assets that are registered in the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. And all of a sudden, we start to find there's an overlapping between geolocational, contextual cues. What is registered on the USPTO? What are some common stories that we all share about coffee, taking it from the bean to the tree to the roaster to the cup? Well, some of those are shared. Everyone, no one can own those. So they're shared. But then what are the ones that we can create that are distinct? And all of a sudden, we start realizing that in the world of how people interpret thoughts and ideas and lenses, there's actually a lot of science. And so we want to utilize that science so that you can make it really, really easy to share who you are, what you do, why it matters. And they look at it and they say, oh, cool new organic coffee shop. Oh, Victor's Coffee. Boop. And they just get it. They look at it and they understand. And so there's a lot of these cues that I'm pulling in together. So the difference between hiring a branding agency and going on Fiverr or, you know, hiring your friend's kid who's in design school is a real agency that's using brand science or marketing science as looking at all these lenses so that your message aligns with who you are, what you do, and why it matters so quickly that it's easier to sell, it's easy to buy, and it's easy to grow.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And just, you know, making a distinctive brand assets and creates more memories. And I like what you shared about Starbucks. I didn't realize that. They chose green because 98% was using red. So it's a great way for them to stand out from everyone else. So these are just some of the important things that in brand science you guys look at and really make people think of you, remember you more, have you stand out more. So definitely a lot of great stuff. So listen, Steve, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. It was a real pleasure having you on. You shared a lot of great tips, a lot of great advice. And I know the people listening to this show have definitely learned a lot. And if people want to get in touch with you, what is the best way for them to contact you?
You bet. So you can check out, we're going to put the link in the show notes. It's Linktree and it's my name, Stephen Fry, and it's spelled uniquely, but we're going to put that in on the Linktree. You can do a few things. You can check out the work we do at Quantum Branding. You can also check out our revolutionary program called Brandpreneur. It's a 10-week program to help people to create an actionable plan to move their brand forward. You can even check out, I've got a 10-minute award-winning talk. You can check that out. Or you can even download your very own distinctive brand assets checklist, or what we call the brand science checklist. So there's several options on there in the Linktree. There's something for everybody. No matter where you are in your business, you can use brand science to act and look just like a Fortune 500 company. Now, don't scale if you're not ready to scale, but you can use that same brand science to make sure that people think of you first, make it easier for you to sell, make it easy for people to buy, and easier for your brand to grow. So check that out over at the Linktree / Stephen Fry, and that's where you can get all those goodies and find out more about me and brand science.
Sounds great. Thanks again, Stephen. Have yourself a great day.
Thank you. See ya. Thanks, listeners, for joining us as well.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you've enjoyed listening, please smash that subscribe button so you don't miss any of our amazing episodes. Please also leave a 5-star rating review and have an awesome day.